This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 83 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. I appreciate it as always. Going to keep this pretty short and sweet. Today's guest, his second time on the show, Jason Spray. I know you guys are going to love what he has to say. Just a really well-rounded perspective of strength conditioning and sports performance of a guy who works with athletes of various sports and has a really long and proven track record in helping improve the performance of athletes in speed, strength, energy system, things of that nature. So we're talking all of that stuff. A couple quick notes. If you haven't yet, check out last week's episode with Tony Holler. Just a fantastic episode on speed and some energy system stuff, talking about, you know, anaerobic bouts versus aerobic system, stuff like that. Check that out if you haven't yet. And just in case you were a little confused, we did skip Meathead Monday this week because of the holiday, so it'll be back next week on Monday. Be on the lookout for that. And yeah, I kind of going to keep it kind of short. I know you guys are going to love this episode with Jason, and I will talk to you guys next time. Enjoy, and you know, as always, take some notes and really get you know, a good handle on what he's saying, because he has some good stuff to say, and I hope you guys enjoy. I'll talk to you next time. Peace.
All right, everyone. Excited to have back on the show Jason Spray, a Muscles and Management alum. This is actually the first guest that I've had on for a second episode. He was on about a year ago. We had an awesome time the first time around, so I can only imagine it's going to be another great one today. Jason, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me on again. I know a lot of people are sitting at home these days, so I appreciate everything that you're doing and a lot of other guys are doing, trying to just get good content out.
Absolutely. Thank you. And it's been definitely a time where, you know, getting stuff out for people to, you know, be able to listen to or watch or whatever it is, you know, in these times is important. And, you know, making sure we kind of keep the train rolling with content. And, you know, it's also been great as a time to, you know, have some coaches, you know, who normally wouldn't have availability as often as they might now. So it's kind of like looking at the positive situations. I've been able to get some guys on, you know, and push some stuff out. So it's been great for sure.
No doubt, dude. I've noticed, if you look on, Instagram and things like that, there's live videos on all day long.
Oh man. Yeah.
I know there's been, several workshops going on. So, there has definitely been a blessing within, you know, the tragedy that's going on.
Absolutely. I was putting this outline together for us for the show, and basically I put a tweet out, as you know, for, you know, questions anybody had, and I got two really good questions that actually, you know, were able to be expanded upon into longer topics. But the first thing, before I get to those questions, the first thing I wanted to talk about is, and this kind of showed up on my Twitter late yesterday afternoon, so this is kind of like a quick add-on to the show outline, and basically it was a data set from, I believe it was labeled as a 2007 lockout, but I'm pretty sure it was incorrect. It was 2011. There wasn't a lockout in 07. It was in 11. But basically saying that in the NFL, there was an increase in Achilles / I believe the number was somewhere around like 240%, like something crazy like that, in Achilles / soft tissue injuries during that 2011 lockout. Can we expect more, in your opinion, of the same in sports following a long layoff? Like, what really goes into that, in your opinion, and what are some of the trends that you see as a guy that works with some pros?
So a cool story about the 2011 lockout. That was one of my very first groups. I was still I was an assistant strength coach at Middle Tennessee, and I had a couple former players. You know, the lockout was going on. They were looking to train. And so I had Eric Walden. I had Ronaldo Hill, who played at Florida, who's with the Titans. But one of my biggest, like, I guess this guy kind of helped put me on like, he raised my platform a little bit, was a cornerback named Kerry Williams. Kerry was previously had been with the Titans and had just been traded to Baltimore. Well, Baltimore, so the lockout hits, Baltimore just drafts Jimmy Smith, who's a, you know, I think he's been in the league now forever. And there was a couple other older corners, and then your secondary was led by Ed Reed. And, you know, so Kerry knew he was a fringe guy going into that camp. And with the lockout, I mean, there's Stern. And one of our conversations going into that offseason was, look, man, some of these cats are going to sit around. They're not going to do anything. They're going to show up to camp. They're going to be out of shape. They're not going to be prepared. They're going to be hamstring injuries. They're going to be out of shape. They're not going to be able to take reps. And for you, being a fringe guy, if you can show up, be in shape, physically look better than the guys next to you. Because at the time, Kerry was, he's a long guy. He was like 6'2 and some change. And I mean, he maybe was 188, 185, something like that. And I was like, if you could just be in shape, be prepared, take every single snap of special teams and defensive back that you can get, you will earn your way and potentially have ability to start. And Kerry busted his butt during that lockout period. And when he showed up to Ravens camp, he was 205. He was in the best shape of his life. And what ended up happening, he called me about a week and a half into camp, was he goes, Coach, you were right. Guys were falling out left and right. They actually had an Achilles tear that camp. They had a bunch of guys with hamstrings, or they had guys that physically were having to tap out and take plays off. And he took every single special teams and defensive back rep for about 3 or 4 days. And next thing you know, that guy's starting and ends up wins a Super Bowl championship with the Ravens. So I know that was a long-winded story, but to what we're saying is, yes, a lot of guys are – look, I get it. You know, the gyms are closed. You can't – some guys' routines have been broken. But at the end of the day, you still have to have some responsibility, you know, for your future. You know you're being paid to do a job. And a lot of guys are probably either just going on a couple light jogs or doing a ton of Peloton rides, and they're not getting out and sprinting, and that's going to bite them in the butt once we start.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to, you know, literally ask you, like, in your mind, because I know, you know, in my, with the population that I work with in terms of, you know, mostly high school and college, like, to in my mind, and I answered this question yesterday, you know, basically saying, like, what would your strategy be, like, either if there's a layoff that is just due to the sport itself and you have access to your facilities, or you're in a situation like we've never been in before right now with this, you know, quarantine and everything's locked out, to say, like, what could I possibly do to kind of keep myself going? And I was like, man, like, it's as basic as just going outside and sprinting and, you know, getting your plyos in. Like, you know, obviously there can be more to it, but, like, just interacting with the ground at a high level, like, in your mind, what are some of those best strategies to, you know, keep, whether it's a high level or just any athlete for that matter, and, you know, in tune with the demands of the, you know, forces, intensity and speeds of regular gameplay?
Yeah, because to your point, this is totally different, right? With the lockout, I mean, every gym in the country was open and every trainer across the country was trying to grab those guys and get them in their facility. This is different. Now the facilities are closed, right? So a lot of guys are probably you can't just stay stationary in your training, you know, doing jumping jacks and burpees and doing some push-ups and sit-ups, and you're not really moving out of that little box. That's not going to carry over. To your point, you can find an open field. I mean, whether you go out and you run 10 tens, right? Or you do 10 20s. I don't really care if you get out and run 110s at a decent clip, run some gassers at a decent clip, right? Just get out of a jog. You have to get up on the balls of your feet and push into the ground. And to your point again, you could find a park bench and just do some hops on and off the bench, but you have to load the calf complex, and you have to get out. You have to load that same complex when you get out and sprint, because you're going to push into that ground and there's a lot of force driving down into that Achilles and that calf complex. And then you have to get up to a high level of speed just so your hamstring can be conditioned. If you will do that, you will be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm even having some of my athletes just run in the, that's not the most ideal thing, but it's, you do, you know, whatever you make do with what you have, like running in the street, in their driveway, you know,
yeah.
not having boxes. Like, that's a question I get all the time. It's like, oh, if I don't have a box for plyometrics, like, what should we do? And it's like, well, you know, that box.
Squat jump, split jump.
Yeah, like, that box is for many reasons, like, you know, other than just the idea of, oh, it's something to jump up to, like, you can literally have a, you know, have your dad put his hand out in the air and jump over it, do a broad jump, do a, just a vertical and land back on the ground. You mentioned the split jumps. Like, there are so many options that you have at your disposal. And it's like, I really do feel like if you are sprinting and jumping twice a week during this time, and you could, yeah, if you're only doing that once a week when, you know, everything is kind of going the way it is, do it twice now. That's the only demand you're really going to have on your body. You're not playing your sport. You know, some of the weight part of your training might not be as intense as it normally is. So in my mind, it's like, if you can do that twice a week, you're really going to separate yourself from, you know, the other athletes on the playing field when things kind of get back to, you know, where they are.
Dude, I'm telling you, training is so simple. It really, really is, man. A lot of people make this stuff so much more complicated than what it is. Just get outside and sprint. That's it. If you have kids, dude, get out and play tag with them. I do that with mine now. We get out and we run around. We play tag. We're driveway basketball. Just get out and move, man. I mean, it's not that complicated. You don't need anything. If you body weight squats, body weight lunges, split jumps, squat jumps, I mean, it's just not that complicated, man. But what you can't do is just sit in a little box and just do sit-ups and crunches and burpees and think you're going to be okay once you get back to, you know, once schools open up and you're back with your team. Yeah. But I'll say this as well. Coaches have to be smart and have to understand that you're not going to be able to recuperate all this time off in 1 day or 2 days or 1 week. Like, it's going to have to be a progression. You're going to have to take your time when you get them back into the facility. And to me, if you just get out and you just start gunning 30s and 40 yards with a bunch of guys, you have to, whenever you would get our guys back, you have to assume they've done nothing. That just is what it is. They can say, oh, coach, I've been doing this. That's fine. But you just need to assume they've done nothing.
Yeah.
And you need to train them accordingly.
Yeah.
And guess what? It is okay if you go out and do some gassers on day one, okay? It's okay if you go out and stride 100 yards on day one. It will be fine. But you have to – it's just good GPP work, all right? Get the muscles working again. Get a good sweat going. You know, get the heart rate up, you know? Like, it's fine. I just don't think we have to overthink this. But, again, when the kids come back, you're not going to recoup all this time off in 1 day, 2 day, 3 day. And I, what my fear is, because there was a study done years ago that 90-ish percent of all deaths that occurred in the NCAA happened on day one or day two once the kids had a week or two off break, because coaches tend to try to do too much and try to set up, prove a point and set a standard on day one and two.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're gonna get to that a little bit too. It's like, you know, sometimes the idea of the sport coach trying to get their hands on the energy systems or conditioning portion of things, and, you know, just in a general sense, you know, where that could go wrong. But it could definitely go wrong if you have athletes that are a little deconditioned, and, you know, they go back out there day one, day two, and it's like, let's absolutely kill them to try to, like, you know, prove a point and see who was tough and who was doing whatever they were doing. Like, yeah, you want to kind of know, you know, from a standpoint of who's responsible enough to get their work done and things like that. But, like, you can't just go in there thinking that every person or every player on the roster was, you know, diligent in their training while they were, you know, away in this time, even if they were with a trainer. And that kind of, like, brings up what I wanted to ask you about. My next part of this was, like, you see a lot of these, or not a lot, but I've seen a handful of some of these high-level guys still, you know, back with trainers during this time, and they're hitting the unstable surfaces, and they're bouncing on the BOSU balls, and doing all this stuff that Bleacher Report seems to like a lot. And that's another topic for another day. Like, can we get some interns at Bleacher Report and Sports Center that, like, know a little bit about strength conditioning so they stop glorifying this stuff? But, like, in your mind, how much of that unstable surface training can, you know, be, you know, looked at and said, hey, like, we're kind of, you know, conditioning ourselves for our muscles, our ligaments and everything to, you know, be used to these moving surfaces. And then we get put on a non-moving surface like we always play on, and we're not ready for the demands of that.
Again, you know, like, the smoke and mirrors, the eyewash training that those guys do, I just hope and pray, like, that is just a snippet of what they're doing with those guys, just trying to get some attention. Because if that is the meat and potatoes of your training, then you're absolutely getting nothing accomplished. I think we all understand that. You know, I have no issue with, you know, even if it's a, you look at it as a prehab done, you know, post-workout, pre-workout, if you want to come out of the shoes, stand on some AirX pads, do some single leg RDLs or some sort of stability work or whatever that may be, I'm fine with that. If it's a day off and maybe you want to, you know, throw a HECO stick with a guy standing on a an AirX pad, that's fine. But when you turn stuff into like a circus act, right, and you're totally just doing this, trying to be different for the sake of being different, that's when I think we all get frustrated, right? And you're trying to make us all believe that the meat and potatoes of that guy's training is doing a juggling act standing on top of a BOSU ball, and that's absolutely not true. Because what the heck is that even doing for that athlete, right? Nothing. It's absolutely doing nothing. And I promise you, a lot of times you see is like with the Alvin Kamara, was when he was standing on the BOSU juggling whatever he was juggling, that was probably the first or second time they've done that, right? So that just shows you it ain't what you were doing right then that allowed him to do that said exercise. That guy can just do it just because he's just athletic and he just has a little bit of balance and coordination and he can stand on top of that ball. But what the hell is that doing for him as far as playing football? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is something, and I never looked at it this way. Joseph Potts pointed this out to me, and I never looked at it this way. It was like, we always talk about like how it doesn't do anything for you in that sense, but we never looked at it in terms of, or at least a lot of us didn't, about like, is it actually doing, like, you know, some people are like, if they like to do it, let them do it, it's whatever. But it's like, there could be negative repercussions to these type of things. Like, I have to find it, but he linked a study to me basically like showing that, you know, you are, you know, degrading your muscle tissue and all the soft tissue by having it be accustomed to that, you know, moving surface, that when you finally get back on the actual surface, you could run into some issues. And it's just funny, like, you know, you would never point to a guy and say like, that's exactly why this happened, or try to blame anybody. But like, you look at a guy like Alvin Kamara, like, sure, he had a lot of soft tissue injuries, like ankle, knee.
Bro, like, because the last time I checked, right, the ground hits back.
Yeah.
Right? When you're running full speed, right, and you have to stop, the ground doesn't just give with you. Like, the ground's not moving, right? And you're going to have to overcome that to reposition yourself and redirect. It is what it is. And that comes from mobility, stability, and just being strong. And if you don't try to duplicate those movements, and I'm not saying you have to always duplicate them at high speeds, right? I think we all understand that's what the weight room is for. That's why you work your multi-directional lunges and your unilateral work, your bilateral work. You know, you work different planes, you know, in that controlled setting. But, you know, again, you have to go out on the field, and that's why you do your change of direction and whatnot. But if you do not prepare for it, something is going to give. And a lot of times that's going to be you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, even watching videos, like I posted something a couple weeks ago of like Barry Sanders making a cut, like the amount of force you are putting into the ground, if you're going right and then back to left, and you have to plant and kind of displace force out, like you said, like there is a lot of force exerted in that. And you just can't really replicate that by being on an unmoving surface. Like, there's not the ability. You're too worried about balancing on it to actually be able to exert enough force into it. And then you're put back on the field all of a sudden and have to exert a lot of force. Well, look what happens. And then it's like things like, you know, they show Sunday Night Football and they're like, oh, like Kamara, you know, leads the league in yards after contact. And look, let's take a look at his offseason training. It's like, that is the last thing that is helping him. His yards after contact is by, you know, withstanding forces from moving objects around him, not the surface. It's like, what are we doing right here? And it gets me so aggravated with the media and these people with big platforms. It's a part of the reason why I want to build my platform so to be so big, and with the show and everything, is so I can put this stuff out there saying it's not good, and hopefully it gets as much, you know, views as the stuff when they tell you it is good. You know what I mean?
I do. And so, you know, when a new client comes in, right, a new professional athlete, you know, the first thing I let them know is like, look, I'm not flashy. We don't do things to try to be cute and whatnot. night. Like, we're going to come in, we're going to sprint, we're going to jump, we're going to push, we're going to pull, and that's it. And we're going to condition. And I know a lot of guys, my beliefs on conditioning is a little bit different from some of the new age stuff, and that's fine. I said, but we're going to condition. And because at the end of the day, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And so, you know, I just tell them up front, like, we're kind of an old school, I mean, traditional training. It's not cute stuff. We're not dancing on Aerex pads and Bosu balls a bunch. We're not doing that. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, knock on wood, a lot of those guys, they show up to camp, they're in much better shape than their counterparts. They are stronger than their counterparts, and they stay relatively healthy. So, yeah, with that Alvin Kamara stuff, you just, again, I can't stand that either, is when they show that and act like that's why he's good, when it's the furthest from the truth.
Yeah, it's really aggravating, and the average person doesn't know any better, so then they're going to look at it, and you're going to ask you, like, why aren't you doing that? Like, I have to deal with it the worst.
Oh, yeah.
I have to deal with it the worst, because it's like, well, oh, we see this pro athlete doing it, why aren't you doing it? Like, it must be good if the pro athlete's doing it. I'm like, well, that's not the right thought process to have. But then it's like, someone like you, at least, like, you have these pro athletes who are intelligent enough, at least you would think so. And that's my next question about, like, why is this still happening? You know, they at least know, you know, what is, like, they trust you. They've been with you. Like, nothing's worse than I have to have a 15-year-old's parent ask me, like, why aren't we balancing on stuff? Or the 15-year-old themselves ask me, like, oh, like, I see Kamara doing this. Why aren't we doing that? Like, it must be important if they're doing it. And it's like, it just doesn't work that way.
No, yeah. And I have been blessed where, I mean, but you know, there are still guys out there, you know, with some of these pro guys. I mean, they look at that stuff too, and they make fun of it and they joke. And I mean, you know, I'm luckily surrounded with the guys I work with. They're really intelligent guys. They have a good understanding of training and what it should look like. And I mean, they know that that's clown show stuff, you know, but to your point, if you do own a private training facility, I mean, there may come a time where you have to throw some of the eyewash and smoke and mirror stuff in at the end or the beginning just to kind of appease your clientele. And I know that's not what we want to hear, but I think sometimes, you know, we may be forced to do that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to knowing how to pick your battles. In my experience, I found, like, if, you know, and I'll give you an example. Like, if a kid comes in to me and says, hey, man, like, you know, my parent and my sport coach, you know, demand that wherever I go, like, our speed work is just all foot ladder stuff. Like, they think that's super important for me to get faster. Like, I just, being who I am, I know right. Too much about what gets people faster and it being sprinting to, like, have a kid. Like, I don't have a ladder in my facility. I don't. Like, and I'm not saying, like, they can't be used for warm-ups and stuff like that, but it's just, like, I feel like if they're there, then the kids are going to want to use them for whatever gimmicky shit they saw online. Like, you're going to see, like, some trainer having a guy do, like, the Macarena through the speed ladder, and it's like, oh, coach, I need to do that. And it's just, like, no, like, I'm not going to sacrifice the, you know, teachings and education that I have on what's right and what's wrong just to appease you. So there is that situation. There's also a situation where, like, I have athletes who want to, like, you know, they're about to do a heavy squat set, and they just, in their mind, they feel like that they need to get on the foam roller for 30 seconds and run it across their back. Like, I'm not going to sit there and debate with them and kind of lecture them on, like, you know, just down regulating the muscles and the nervous system before you're about to go. If they feel better and they keep hitting their numbers, like, that's a battle that you probably just kind of let them have and let them do their thing. You have to just kind of pick those little and those big things, because if you kind of just try to go after each little thing like a crusader, you're going to probably turn a lot of the kids off.
No doubt. Like, with the ladder, again, the only thing we use the ladder for is a lot of times we take the ladder out to the field, or if we're about to do a lot of plyos. Like, so if I know we have some extensive plyos coming up, then that's when the ladder comes in play for me. It's just to warm up the calf complex, just before we start jumping.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. The ladder.
It's just another thing. It's really a person using it for something that isn't what it needed. Like, I feel bad for the tool itself.
No.
I really do. Like, it's just like, I feel bad for cleans sometimes because people bastardize them and screw them up, and it makes the clean look like a bad exercise. It's like, well, it's the people that are using it.
What happened too was, like, but you know, you're, you know, the ladder, though, the ladder was like, it became demonized because of all these bullshit trainers, right? That all they have is a ladder and a cone and a ball and a parachute, and they're out in the park doing stupid shit that's taking kids' money because they don't really have anything else they can do with them, right? Yeah. I mean, that's why we all became turned off on it. And exactly, I mean, I get it. I look at that dumb shit too. I drove by a park, you know, last summer, and I see some guy out there. I mean, he's just got a ladder in the field, and he's got them doing stupid shit for 45 minutes on the ladder, and he takes their $20, you know? And I mean, that's just gross to me, but believe me, I get it, dude.
Yeah, it's just you get to the point where you see so many people use something the wrong way or proclaim it does something that it doesn't, and it just really, really starts to turn you off. But why do you think we are still seeing some professional athletes fall for these gimmicks when it seems to me like more of the younger athletes are no longer, like, you see less younger athletes using these things with good trainers than you will some of these pros that are training with a certain person. Like, why is that in your mind?
Some of the stuff is expensive that they're using, right? Like some of the glasses and some of the weird shit you would see like Antonio Brown using. I mean, that stuff's just expensive. And like, so if I owned a private gym, I mean, I may not want to shuffle my money toward some glasses or some other goofy shit when I need sleds and I need bumper plates and I need dumbbells and med balls and, you know, that kind of thing. You know, some of it is guys. There's a subgroup of guys that they don't like training. They like to act like they're training, and they just, you know, they just kind of want to show up, and, you know, it doesn't require much effort just to stand on a BOSU ball and be goofy for, you know, a couple minutes and lay around and foam roll. And, you know, they're not really training. They're just kind of hanging out at the facility. Right. So, you know, I think there's some of that too. And I think, well, sometimes, you know, with older guys, you know, if you trained all the way through high school, you trained through college, you know, you've been in the league for a while. Like, I mean, we all understand it. Your body doesn't feel quite like it used to. And, you know, you got some guy that's telling you that, you know, this workout right here, let me hook you up to this machine and you don't really have to work out, but you get all the benefits of working out. And, you know, like that just, I mean, it just suits a lazy need that they want. And unfortunately that we know that's not the case. And I understand that. Yeah, as you get older, like, you know, you don't maybe necessarily have to bench press 400 pounds. I get that. You don't have to necessarily squat 400 pounds, but you can still go in and train with a barbell, train with a dumbbell. And that's always been I try to make sure that my guys understand that is make sure you don't forget what got you here, because what got you here is what's going to keep you there. And, you know, we may change what, you know, train the apparatus we're using. We may not bench with a barbell all the time. It may be more pressing with dumbbells and whatnot, but you know, the patterns are still the same. And I think as long as you can try to keep those guys, you know, doing what they did to get them there, they will stay there. That's the longer they'll be able to stay there, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. You brought up a really good point too. It's like how many of them actually want to train versus like they can go in, yeah, kind of, you know, stand on the ball and catch some sticks, get a viral video on Bleacher Report, and it's just like kind of, yeah, it goes like, do you in your mind, like, and listen, I'm not here to, you know, even if I disagree with their methods, I'm not here to just like, you know, destroy somebody, but like you look at this guy, cause let's just be real here. If he puts his stuff out on the internet, he's willing to be talked about. You look at this guy, Dr. Reef, I think he's in Florida, and he is the one doing all these crazy videos with some of the NFL guys. And it's like, do you think he legitimately thinks that works, or it makes him look good and it looks, you know, complicated, and, you know, he thinks it'll get him more athletes and more exposure? Like, in my mind, like, you have to be a certain type of person to keep putting that stuff out there when loads, dozens upon dozens of good strength coaches are just taking a big crap all over it, saying how bad it is. And it's like, he just keeps putting it out there. Like, do you think he legitimately thinks like this stuff is good? I don't understand.
Well, one, I think we all know, like, sometimes you have to be different, right, to stand out. And with a saturated market, you know, he's trying to do things to make himself look different and maybe to look a little bit smarter than the average guy. But I was going to say, like, before we kind of got on him, I'm telling you, it takes nuts to show up every day knowing that you're going to get under a bar, you're going to pick up dumbbells, you're going to go out and condition, and you're going to sprint, and you're going to be in that gym for an hour and a half. Your whole workout's going to be an hour and a half of getting after it. Yeah. That takes that's a whole different mindset.
You have to be a sick person.
Like, and everybody ain't got that. You do. And everybody ain't built like that. Everybody ain't got that shit to them. And there's something to be said for that. And that's why I always try to tell everybody about like Kevin Byard and Logan Ryan. But like Kevin Byard has been training like that since he was 18 years old. And I mean, that's why that guy just got paid, because he's wired different. He shows up, he's going to bust his ass. And like a lot of guys ain't built like that. And you know, you just start to see that, man. And I mean, if you ain't built like, and again, a guy like Mark Ingram, I just can't believe that the only thing he does is show up and juggle. I just can't. And if that's what he's doing, then we all understand the injuries are going to start to pile up, and he's getting older anyway. But like, I just can't believe that's all he does. I just can't believe he doesn't get under a bar and squat, or he doesn't do unilateral work with dumbbells or barbells and plyometrics. I just can't believe that. But I just think that guy's doing things, trying to be different, just trying to create his own niche. And to me, it's horseshit. And I just think he's just trying to create his own niche to make some money.
Yeah, me too. And it's just like, it's also frustrating because he never does, like, you could literally sit there and talk about how, and this is how I kind of have a feeling it's just a big marketing, you know, cycle of bullshit, because he just literally never engages with anybody when it comes to people literally just destroying his stuff. Like I say this in a way to make people understand like how much, I guess no publicity is bad publicity, but like I've seen coaches and I've gotten like 1,000 like likes on a post saying how what he's doing is stupid. Like we are literally like, there are a yes. lot of people that agree with us, right? Like the fact that he yes. never steps up and tries to like even argue with somebody about it, like it just shows me a lot about what they're doing, if that makes sense.
It does. But that's my point. And I hate to even say it, like those of us who have even played a sport, right? If you have played a sport, and I know there's strength coaches that go, oh, don't listen to the guys. So this is what we did when I played. I get all that shit, right? I get it. But man, if you have played, especially a game like football, you know that game is a fight, man. I mean, even out there on the islands, man, those receivers and those DBs are still getting after each other. You're still getting the shit knocked out of you, man. Or you're when you dive for a ball, again, like we said, the ground hits back. Your body has to be able to absorb that shit, man. And like when people, you know, same thing with conditioning. I get it. You may not sprint over 10 yards, but that shit accumulates from drive to drive, to series, to play. Like there was a play, there was several games in a row this year where Kevin Byard was hooked up to a tracking device, and he sprinted over 1,000 yards in a game. He ran over 1,000 yards in a game. To me, that's why it's still important to go out and do a little bit of old school conditioning when you think of just 110s and gassers and shuttles. Because there are times where you're not full speed. You're just jogging back to the huddle. Then you're jogging back to your position. Then you sprint. Then you get off the ground. You jog back. You move over here. Like, so I just don't understand how someone can be eyewashed to juggling. And some of the shit that you see Jameis Winston doing right now. I get it. Gyms may be closed. But freak, man, get out and train. Like, quit standing there with a damn brick in your hand or putting on a helmet and having someone pull you with rubber bands. Like, bro, you've got to get out and work, man.
Yeah, and it's also, you mentioned the other side of the spectrum. It's either these quote-unquote fans, and it really gets under my skin when they're like, oh, he's a physical therapist, this guy, you wouldn't understand. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure I know this is just a load of bullshit no matter what he is. Like, I'm pretty sure I know yeah. having a guy kneel on a Swiss ball while he's catching sticks with vision glasses on. Like, that's probably a gimmick. And then you look at, like, the other side of it where it's like, some of these football players, these pro athletes, no matter what sport it is, they have these old school coaches that they might have had since they were kids who really never knew what they were doing. They got them tough because they were they were doing tough work with them. But like, don't make the mistake of like those athletes were born with those genetics. Like it wasn't their crappy bear crawls they did for the entire summer in like 2002. That led to, them playing at Florida State, the Buccaneers. That was my Jameis Winston reference. This guy's been with him like, since he was 16. Saying? It's like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, it's still wrong.
I mean, what's the old saying? Any idiot can make another idiot tired.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so to that point, like, what if your coach, like, okay, well, my kindergarten teacher had us do potato sack races, right? That don't mean the shit's good. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not damn field day, bro. Like, I mean, they're just making crap up. Like, that's what I can't stand is when you just see a hodgepodge of bullshit. It's just a bowl of shit that they just throw together that doesn't sequence together, has no rhyme or reason. It's just shit to make you tired, man. Yep. I can't stand that. Or it's just shit that looks good, but it's not doing anything. It's not measurable. Like, what are you doing? Like, I just that kind of crap just irks me. Like, you know, with the doctor, what's his face? I mean, man, if some of that was like post-op, like, you know, just shit that you're doing just to try to get, you know, get them
even
ready.
Even then,
to
it's still very, it's very over the top.
I
like,
know.
You're gonna like, you're gonna hurt somebody. It's like you mentioned before, the Eric's pad. Like, I have PTs I work with. They never do anything balance wise other than something on an Eric. Like, standing on the ground with your one leg alone is balance. Like,
I know.
What's the risk reward here? That's a guy that's worth millions of dollars. Like, his body is literally worth millions of dollars. Like, he takes one false step, he's done.
No doubt. I'm with you 100%. I've always said this too. A lot of times people look at these professional athletes and think they are just, I mean, God gifted in everything. And that's not necessarily true. A lot of those guys are average strength, right? They have mobility issues. Sometimes they're not very good on one leg. And if you will just pound the shit out of the basics, just do the basics very well, that will go a long ways with those guys. Because a lot of times those guys are undertrained, man. They are. They're just undertrained. And if you just push, you pull, you bilateral, unilateral, just keep those guys well-versed in training, it just goes so much further than what you would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, like, simple is not easy. It's a phrase that the hockey organization that I work with uses, and people think just because it's simple that it's easy and it's not working. Well, simple's not easy, right?
Right. Hell no, it's not easy, man. So. Like, a simple program done well is much better than that fancy shit you're doing over there standing on that ball doing a bunch of nothing.
And that's the thing, too. It's like, we could easily put a guy doing a single leg kind of extensive hurdle hop and write like this crazy scientific.
Yes.
We could do this crazy scientific explanation for it and make it go viral. But sometimes we don't do that because people in our own field will just be like, dude, you're a clown. What are you doing? Like, oh, the extensive plyometrics with the soft tissue quality and whatever. Like,
bro, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's the other thing I can't stand is like the whole paralysis by over analysis or whatever the hell it is. Like, sometimes just shut up, man. Like, I'm older now. Like, you know, I'll be 42 in July. I've been to conferences for years. I've read the books and like, you have all this like conference talk, man. You get up there and you spit off all these fancy ass words and you think it makes you feel good. And then you pop on the film. You're like, yeah, they're squatting. Yeah, man. They're benching. Yeah, they're fucking jumping. Yeah, they're just, you know, it's like you're doing the same shit that 90% of us are out here doing, but you're just throwing out the alphabet of soup, trying to sound smarter than what you are. And at the end of the day, it's just sprinting. It's just jumping. It's just squatting. It's just benching. It's chin-ups. It's rows. Like, just keep it simple. Because a lot of guys get turned off by that when you try to talk to them like an egghead when you can't relate. Just, I don't know, keep it simple, man.
Yeah, it's couldn't say it better myself. And speaking of keeping it simple, so now I want to get into a couple of these questions that I had. The first one comes from Coach Ulrich at Colworld 50. How do you plan/program plyometric work, reps, sets, and schemes? So we kind of alluded already to extensive plyo. So let's talk a little bit about extensive versus intensive, like some of the differences between the two and maybe kind of how you'd go about programming them from like the start of an off season, you know, and as the off season progresses.
So some of the low level stuff, man, is always, it goes back to like where we would use the ladder, you know, the ladder, jump ropes, dot drills, you know, that's kind of that basket of things that you would look at there. You know, we'll do those a lot early and often. Again, just trying to make sure the calf complex is warmed up and strengthened up. And, you know, we'll do those before we sprint. Some sort, again, we'll pull from that category before we sprint, or I like to do those before we clean, just get the nervous system ramped up. And then, as far as, you know, getting a little more, you know, advanced, I always try to, even if we're out on the field, if we have a large group, we may not do any superset, with our plyos, but if it's in the weight room, we typically try to superset like the lower body plyometrics with upper body lifts. Or if we're doing upper body plyometrics like med ball slam, plyo pushups, clap pushups, anything like that, we'll superset those with a lower body lift. Just because I just don't like a lot of standing around. We try to utilize and maximize the time that we have. So typically workouts are broke up into trisets. If we're going to do a hurdle hop, you know, we may superset that with a bench press. A lot of times you can see this stuff on Instagram. Like it's not smoke and mirrors. I mean, we just roll it right out there the way it is, you know. So typically if I know we're going to clean heavy that day, we may get in some low level plyos before we clean. If the cleans aren't going to be that heavy that day, if it's more of a squat emphasis that day, then that's when the plyometrics will be a little bit more advanced, and we'll attack those a little bit more as far as like higher hurdle jumps and that kind of thing. Mike Boyle's approach is kind of where I built a lot of that from. Was, you know, we start off with box jumps, you know, eliminating gravity, we'll go over hurdles and absorb, and we'll work into more bounding from there. Same thing with like unilateral stuff. We'll start again, just like in the ladder, maybe single leg with a jump rope, dot drill type things. Then we'll, you know, hop onto some small short boxes. We do a ton of stability work unilaterally, and then we'll get into some bounding. But typically, I mean, we will stay just in a basic phase anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks, maybe even four, just depending on what we look like. A guy like Kevin, who is a low rep guy, you show him how to do it once. I mean, he's got it on the second rep. We can advance through a little bit quicker. But some of the other guys, as we watch it, we just take our time with it. We don't say, okay, I try to look at where I want to get to and work my way back. And if we don't necessarily get there, it is what it is. Just because, you know, working with pro athletes, you only have them for so long in the off season, and there's always going to be breaks, interruptions come about. If it's with our high school kids or when I was in college, I knew I would have that time, and we would, you know, work them through it. But I just try to, I know where I want to get to. I know I want to get into interrupted bounding, your true plyometric, consecutive rep jumps. And we just kind of build from there. And the best way to get there is bilateral squatting, trap bar deadlifting, rear foot elevated split squats. You name it, lunging, all that stuff will help build into your plyometrics.
Absolutely. What would you say early on in off season, like the guy just, came off a tough season, grueling season, they're kind of beat up still. Like, what are some of those goals with those extensive plyometrics in terms of, why we're doing them and what we're really looking to get out of them in terms of, all the different areas really?
We normally would start off with a lot of, we maybe not necessarily use a barbell coming right out of it. It'd be more dumbbell work, body weight work. But I'm just looking for pliability, out the gate and just seeing those guys. So, just doing squat, squat jumps in place, a 3x10, a 3x8, a 4x6, just body weight. Are they able just to bend and get up in and out of those jumps? And if it looks efficient, same thing with clap pushups. If you have older guys, not necessarily a younger kid that can't really do a clap pushup. We're talking about guys who, they have pretty serious training under their belt, quite a few years. Once they can get to where they're doing smooth clap pushups, they can do smooth squat jumps. Then we'll start building from there. The high school level, like where I'm at now, I wouldn't classify this as like high level athletes. And so, I mean, really the first 2 months, dude, it was a ton of just squat jumps, ISO lunges. We haven't even got the clap pushups yet. It's a lot of med ball punches, med ball slams, pushup variations. But honestly, if you're going to start when you're coming in into off season, I would just start with squat jumps. If they're trained and they can handle it, just clap pushups, that's a good place to start. Box jumps are always fine, just as long as you don't turn it into an idiot show where you're trying to jump on a box that's,
82 inches.
Fucking. Yeah, like as long as you don't take box jumps and just make it into a shit show, right? Where you're just trying to make that into a circus act, right? Know what you're trying to do. Those are fine. But, I just, again, one thing I know a lot of guys love, I never liked them as much, is just doing a ton of broad jumps. You know, when I was in middle, we had a hill out front that was perfect for that. And it was a grass hill. And man, I loved to attack the broad jumps up the hill. But I've always been worried, you know, just in my mind, attacking a ton of broad jumps, you know, just with someone getting a knee injury. I the risk versus reward, I can get other jumps. I mean, would we do, you know, a horizontal jump maybe out of some bags or something like that? Yes. But just, you know, all out broad jumps, those always just worried me. And again, we all have our hangups. That's one that always bothered me.
I'm with you.
You know,
on that.
I just worry about a guy. Yeah, just, you know, because at the end of the day, if I go back to my coach and be like, hey, man, because again, when someone gets hurt, it's never going to be your worst player. It's going to be your best fucking player. And you go back and be like, you know, Coach Kevin Byard tore his ACL doing a broad jump. You think he's going to give a shit? I mean, he's going to be pissed. He don't give a, I mean, so yeah, that's one of those things where it's just risk versus reward. You know, I've just never really believed in attacking broad jumps like I know some other people do.
Yeah, I've tried to before, and it's just that landing just makes me so nervous.
I will say too, and still with your unilateral hops too, man, like single leg, like don't make that into a clown show. Day one, you shouldn't be bounding on one leg. I just want to make sure I stress that, you know, make sure that those guys can hop and stick and get stable, you know, but just pound that, man, work that for a couple weeks. You know, you're not in a hurry. You're not in a rush, you know? And broad jumps, when I see guys I've seen some D1 colleges, man, and I'm not going to call them out, but I mean, places I was really, really like disappointed in early this offseason, a basketball school. I mean, dude was doing sloppy ass single leg jumps, man. Like, that's not the purpose and that's not the point of what we're trying to get done. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So one last thing on the plyometric discussion. Actually, two things. I just remembered that I was going to say this. So you mentioned the broad jump. Something that I've kind of done recently over the past year or so that I've kind of enjoyed is a hybrid between a standard box jump and a broad jump. More of like that linear focus, but like they're maybe going, let's just say the average athlete were to go, you know, 18 inches or 2 feet from the box when they do a box jump, have them go like to 5 feet out and have to do like long range single leg or even bilateral jumps to the box to get more of that, you know, linear extension type stuff, but you're still kind of landing to the box. I found to be a really nice hybrid so that you can kind of protect them on that landing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. And anytime you can add a little bit more vertical to it, I just think it's a little bit safer, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's also like, you know, that all-out sellout. Like, you watch the guys do the broad jumps in the combine. It's like, that is a lot of force coming out on their legs.
I mean, I'm just waiting for a guy to get a PCL or a meniscus. And, you know, the other hang-up I have is when I see guys doing full cleans with college athletes and pro athletes, like, I just don't see the risk factor. I mean, you're catching and dropping full speed in the bottom of that clean. I mean, I know guys do it and I understand. I just, if someone tears a meniscus doing that or ruptures a patella, you're not going to be able to explain that to your head coach.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be really a real shame to see a guy that was going to get drafted at the top of the draft anyway, kind of go into a combine and get hurt doing a broad jump or something. The broad jump, just like, I'm with you. It always kind of made me cringe. I get it. Like, there is some significance to it. Like, that linear power output, your first couple strides, like, I get that. But I don't know. Yep. Just, it seems like, you know, give me a guy's, you know, 5 or 10 yard time and let's kind of see where that is and let's judge their linear explosiveness off of that versus, you know, having them sell out and land sloppily on a broad jump. You know, but yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah, I agree. Just there's a lot of other tools in the box, bro. Like, you're not going to win or lose a game because you didn't do a broad jump.
Yeah. What would you say volume wise?
But you could lose the game if you lose the right person getting injured, right? So anyway.
What would you say, just I know this is like, we can keep this sort of vague because it's hard to just all out prescribe volume, but like just in a general sense, for the last part of that question, like what would you say for volume considerations, you know, whether it's the intensive more, you know, fast moving and, you know, more intense plyometrics versus those extensive and kind of rhythmic based? Like, what would your volume recommendations usually be?
Somewhere in that 18 to 32 rep range is kind of what I've always looked at.
For both or for extensive?
For extensive.
Okay. Yeah, that, I'm with you. I usually work like sets of six generally.
Yeah, and a lot of times, honestly, this is the same way with like percentages. Like, and I go on how the athlete looks. To be honest with you, you know, if there's a day where like, you know, man, he looks good. He's bouncy. He's reactive. Like he's tuned in. Like, you know, I may throw a couple sets in there just because we can get it. If there's a day I look at him, he's kind of mushy on the ground and it's not there, then I may pull back a few reps. So, I mean, I honestly do a lot of my coaching just with my eyes. I don't whore myself out to a percent chart or, you know, to some other German Russian guy's percentage chart from 100 years ago. I mean, I look at it. If they look good, they're bouncy and springy and reactive and pliable. I mean, we just kind of go. If it's not there that day, we leave it alone.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That makes sense. It's a lot of it is like I have to know how they're feeling and what the current situation kind of sets us up for before I can make that decision.
Yeah, dude. I mean, there's been days we've come in and like I know I wanted to do something. I watched the warm up. We did a few things before that. I'm like, man, that's not going to be there today. And so you just call an audible, and you know, you don't necessarily have to tell the athlete that, right? I mean, when I was in college, yeah, we may have had 100 guys in there, and as a group, I just didn't feel like there was going to be. What there was maybe something that I want to get accomplished. I didn't think that they just had it that day. So I'd walk over to my staff and go, hey, instead of this, we're going to do that. Boom. And I mean, that was all it was to it. You know, like you don't have to make a big deal about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like there are ways that you can objectively test readiness, but like a lot of it sometimes is subjective and just like being an experienced coach and knowing your athletes and like when they don't have it, like there's kind of a little bit of both that goes into that for sure. So I would agree 100% with that. So I mentioned this before when we first started talking about how we're getting into energy systems, and I was like, oh, I have a question on that later. So basically this comes from, Jay Bush. Can you guys discuss position coaches who try to do the job of strength coaches and strength coaches who try to do, position coach work? So I guess tackle this part first, like, strength coaches trying to bring the sport to the weight room incorrectly. So this whole damn sport specificity thing, like in your mind, right, like how do we avoid some of the, you know, pitfalls of that?
I think at the end of the day, just know your why, know why you're there. Right. And, you know, don't try to be too cute. And that's always been my thing. Look, I'm a strength coach. I'm not a running back coach. I'm not a receiver coach. I'm not a DB coach. You know, and I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of the pro guys, that's one thing they've always appreciated with me, because I told them that, like, look, I'm not going to get out here. Like, if we're working just back pedals and warm up or backwards run or something like that, like, I'm going to teach it from a strength point, just from a general preparation standpoint, right? I'm not trying to tell you how to backpedal in a game. That's your position coach or your head coach's job. That's not mine. So, you know, that's the way I've always looked at it from that standpoint. You know, the other thing is you have to understand as a strength coach, every coach thinks they can do your job. That's just, it is what it is. You know, a lot of times coaches will say the strength coach is important, but they think they know more than you do when it comes to what you're doing. And that's just the case. And I know I've heard Mike Boyle say this years ago, and is you got to be able to speak coach, whatever sport that you're training, you have to be able to speak that sport to that coach to try to buffer that, I guess, you know, that in between the sport and the weight room. You know, it just is what it is, man. But you can't win the battle of just telling your head coach or your position coach, just get the F on all the time. I mean, because that's just going to make your job harder on you on the back end, you know? So you want to try to create those relationships. Because I mean, I've had that as well. I mean, a sport coach, you know, they'd come in and say, hey, I saw, again, to your point, like I saw Alvin Kamara, you know, bouncing on a stability ball. I remember one time I had a coach come in and say, I saw Steve Nash bouncing on this, like, it looked like a surfboard, you know, juggling bowling pins, you know, and I'm just like, you know, in my mind, I'm like, that's just stupid as shit ever. But, you know, you can't necessarily say that all the time. You have to buffer that. You know, I would always dig, though, with some of our football coaches. I would send them videos of, man, look at this play that so-and-so ran. God, that's amazing. You know, if you want to get back at them a little bit, because they don't like this shit either when you reverse the roles on them a little bit. But I think just at the end of the day, you know, just if you're a strength coach in college or in high school, just try to, if you want to keep the coaches out of the weight room doing that to you, then don't go do the water cooler talk with them. You know, don't try to throw other coaches on staff under the table, you know, and getting them. You know, if you don't do that, then maybe they won't do that to you coming down to the weight room trying to tell you other stupid shit to do.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Bob Alejo was on the show a few weeks ago, and he made a great point about there's just a way where each person, so you have the strength coach, you have the athletic trainer, you have the sport coach, you have the you know, person who's in charge of nutrition, whatever it is. Like, there is a way to go about the communication between all of the sections of everything that kind of goes into an organization or an athlete or whatever it is. And it's like, hey, like, the sport coach looks at the strength coach, and instead of saying, like, we need to do cleans, you need to do this, whatever, say, hey, coach, like, you know, we play volleyball. I think vertical power is going to be huge for us this offseason, and let them figure out how they're going to develop it. You look at the,
right.
You look at, yeah. the strength coach looks at the nutritionist and says, like, oh, I think, the boys would, or the girls, whoever it is, would really benefit from, like, right when they're done here, having a meal ready for them. That's like a lot of protein or whatever. Like, right when they get done, like, they don't really have access to that. Let them figure out what they're going to eat. Like, let them make that decision. Or the sport coach saying, like, hey, you know, I don't know, I mean, this is kind of dicey, because if they say they think they're not conditioned, like, what that means to them could be a totally different thing than what it actually does mean. But, like, saying, oh, right. You know, our guys looked a little like this week. Like, what do you think? Like, there's ways to go about it versus saying, like, you don't have them doing this enough. You need to do this more. Like, there's certain ways to go about stuff.
There is. And you just, again, you know, I just think, don't blur the lines. Don't try to throw under coaches under the table to make yourself look better to them. And, you know, just keep your thing. And, you know, I think a lot of times, if you don't disrespect another guy's thing to a other coach, they won't come into your realm trying to do that to you. So, very good point you made on that. And, you know, Bob does a great job. He's been around this for a long time. And what you said, he said, is absolutely the truth.
Yeah, it's just, it shows you how you can have collaboration, but, you know, in a way that doesn't step on anyone's toes. And it's just knowing as coaches, like, you made a great point before of, like, if we don't do it to them, you would hope it wouldn't be done as much to us. But there are times where you can do it to them to kind of prove a point, and you'll see them kind of back off. Like, they don't like when it's done to them. Like, if a hitting coach say to me, like, oh, they need to get their core stronger. Like, they need to, like, we're not working on that already. I'm like, we've been training for 6 weeks total. Like, I met him 6 weeks ago. Like, we're going to get to it. It's going to happen. But, like, it's not something that just pops up out of nowhere, you know, really quickly.
Right.
And if I send a video back saying, oh, like, maybe his hands move a little better in this, like, you'd watch how quickly they'll stop doing that.
Oh, hell yeah. If that same batting coach, you were like, if he told you, hey, you know, the core's got to get stronger, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, dude, did you see Don Mattingly teaching guys how to hit the other day on ESPN? God, that's the best I've ever seen.
He was talking about
top hand this and that. And, oh, dude, they would just get mad and walk off. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a time and place to kind of play that cat and mouse game if you really need to. If you're a strength coach listening to this and you've been in that position before, that's just kind of our little way of telling you, like, hey, maybe you have to deal with it that way if there's no other way that's working. But always try to handle it professionally and talk to them first and do things the right way for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because just, it's not a battle you're going to win, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's just not. You can't just tell them to get out. And I mean, because at the end of the day, the head coach, I mean, if it's the head coach, I mean, he's the reason why you have a job, you know?
Yeah, and if you're even in the private sector, like, a lot of those coaches are the ones that are going to be sending you athletes, so you have to make sure you handle things well with them.
Right, absolutely.
So, the last little part of that, you know, the sport coaches getting into the strength and conditioning work. And I really want to talk about how that kind of bleeds into the incorrect application of energy systems training and understanding, like, how that often gets butchered.
Quite a bit, because especially older coaches, I mean, they, you know, in their minds, a lot of times they think of, conditioning as, you know, going out running miles, right? You know, jogging. And, you know, again, you know, I'm still in the believer of not necessarily just having to running 110 several times a week, you know, once a week, tapping into some of that energy system work, I think is fine. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, we all understand that repetitive sprinting is majority of court and field sports. And, you know, with those guys, sometimes the issue you'll run into is either you have a coach who's soft and doesn't want to let you do your job, right? Ah, let's not run them so much. Or you have a coach who comes out and just wants you to bury him in the dirt.
I wish I dealt with that sometimes. You know, I always have the opposite experience.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, when you're around it for a long time, dude, you come across it all, you know, and
yeah.
So it just, again, learning how to talk coach and just massaging those, and sometimes you have to give them a little bit. And you know, I've had coaches tell me that, hey, you know, I want to do more of this and more of that. And you're not necessarily a fan of what they're asking you to do, but you can window wash it, window dress it a little bit to make it look like what they're wanting, but yeah, it's not necessarily what they're asking. So I think that's just a lot. That's just experience too. But that's the importance of listening to your coach. And again, just, I remember a coach a long time ago, you know, speed day, right? You're just doing pure linear work. And we know that, you know, full rest recoveries and that kind of thing. But a head football coach cannot stand seeing guys just stand around, right? I mean, that just drives them crazy. And, you know, he was just giving me some tricks on that. And you just disguise it, right? You just have several different lines going, you know, so at least somebody is running the whole time and, you know, while other guys are getting a rest. And again, that's just why it's just window dressing, man. You just got to window dress it and make it look like what they're asking for. So.
Yeah, exactly. There's times you can do that, times you can't, times you really do have to sit down and have a conversation. And I've been lucky enough to have sport coaches a lot of the times, like kind of once I got their trust, let me kind of guide them along the way of like what should be done and what shouldn't be done and what's going to be effective and what's going to help the athletes the most and not put them in the position of being overworked or injured and whatever it is. So it's definitely something you need to have experience with to really understand of the ways that you can handle it. But there's definitely more than one way. If it's something small enough that you can kind of just, like you said, window dress it and, you know, give someone the illusion that they are controlling something that they might not be, sometimes it's better off being done that way and just easier for everybody from a perspective of just like working relationships and things like that, that the athlete can ultimately just, you know, get what they have to get done and stuff like that.
Yep, absolutely. It's just relationships, dude. I mean, that's all it is relationships. Now, there has to be a success ratio come from some of that, right? I mean, build a lot of times through like success. I think we all understand that. And the more successful you are, that coach will trust you a little bit more. And same thing with the players. You know, if they're developing and they're playing well and staying relatively injury free, they start to, you know, build trust in you. So it's all about relationships.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of a little opportunity now, closing thoughts, kind of floor is yours. Anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to get to or you wanted to kind of wrap up, anything, you know, we already have talked about, kind of take it away.
You know, one thing I will say is for like all my college strength coaches out there, high school guys too, like I know this time has been, it's been crazy, right? It's been different. But the one thing I will say is make sure you are getting out and try to enjoy your family, whether that's in the backyard, throwing the ball around, going on walks, you know, watching movies with your kids, with your wife, just hanging out, having some quality time, because we all know that this is a blessing for a lot of strength coaches. And you may not know that and you may not realize that right now, but as a college strength coach, you work so many hours. You don't really get any time away. This is truly the time to put your family first. And just for your sanity and just for like family relationships, make sure you do this, because there's a lot of time right now you can build quality memories with your kids, with your wife. So just don't miss out on that. And, you know, sometimes put that book down and just go get off the phone and go play with your kids, hang out with your family, just because I'm telling you that. And 6 months from now, hopefully we're all back to normal and you're going to look back on that time and wish, damn, man, I could have got out and done a little bit more with them. So, you know, just, again, that's just, I just want to make sure I said that, because, you know, I remember being younger and just, you know, like the job came before anything else. And, you know, I just want to make sure you guys understand that, you know, your family's sitting right there, enjoy them. This can be a blessing. It doesn't have to necessarily be a curse. So just, you know, enjoy your family.
Yeah. Well said. You know, there's a balance with everything. Like, yeah, you have extra time now, so get work done and be productive. But like, you know, make sure you, yep. you know, you, if you're a younger strength coach and you don't get as much time, like me with your parents, cause you're working a lot, like spend some time with them, you know, trying to make sure I'm a little more active with my nephew right now. Like, I don't have kids personally, but if I did, I would say the same thing, like spend more time with them. But, if I have a lot of the younger strength coaches listening, like, you know, make sure you spend time with your parents, your relatives, your family, and use this time to get better and to grow and put content out, but make sure there's a healthy balance and make sure you're still training and keeping your body, you know, where it is. Cause the exercise is important for the mental sanity, part of things and keeping yourself kind of going in these times. So, really well said on that and a really good way to kind of end things.
Hey, I will say this too, into that point too, younger strength coaches, this is a great time to learn. Like yep. a lot of times the younger strength coach, you're GAing, you're an assistant, you're doing a lot of dirty work. You know, this is a really good time right now to learn. This is a time right now to be creative. So, you know, you're limited. Even if you have a bar, if you have dumbbells in a garage or whatever, if you don't have it, go out to the park. Come up with different run schemes, right? Come up with different conditioning strategies. Come up with different, like, you know, strength programs. Like, try to, you know, come up with push-up variations, chin-up variations, you know, anything like that, lunge variations, squat, you know, programs. Like, just try to be creative, man, because, like, right now, you have the time. Do that, you know? And for my older strength coaches, yeah, hey, man, you've been grinding. Enjoy your time with your family. So I just want to make sure I want to say both sides of that. You know, young guys, right now is the time to really try to be creative and make your way.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Coach, I want to thank you so much again for coming on another great episode. As always, I appreciate your time and, you know, stay safe and stay well with your family through all this and talk to you again soon.
Yes, sir. I appreciate everything you do, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Muscles and Management Podcast brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jared DeFilippo, signing off on the show that's changing the way we view training, sports performance, and business.